Welcome to the milk bar. 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 Welcome to the milk bar.
Welcome along to episode 149 of the Milk Bar. Jason and Zoe here. You're back from your holiday. You all right?
I had a lovely weekend, Jason.
Well, you were celebrating your birthday. It's all very special.
Yes, I went to Llandudno because we always used to go there when I was little, and I haven't been there for a while, and it was lovely.
Did you go on the pier?
Yes.
It's nice.
Yes. And I went up the Orme on the tram.
No, you didn't walk it.
Well, I was trying to persuade them because we always used to walk it, but they were a bit
unfit. I tend to drive. I tend to go fairly late and just drive up to the top. It's quite nice.
Quite
not too many people
steep,
about.
It's steep, though, I must admit.
I'm just going to play. I've got a right cold and listening to myself in my headphones, I sound ever so bunged up.
Yes, you do.
So I'm, don't pass it this way.
No,
it's okay. So it's on the way out now. I'm just bunged up now. I feel much better than I did at the weekend, but that's another story. I'm not going there either.
You've had a bit of a bad weekend.
It's been busy. That's all I can say. Right. Coming up on the show today, we'll be hearing from Luke Wassell of the band of Kings and Captains. Music from them, including their brand new single, which is literally a matter of moments away.
And I have been working up to this for quite a few months, Jason. I've actually got a celeb.
Ooh,
this week.
Who have we got?
We have Bobby G from Booksviz, of course.
So he'll be joining us for a little bit of a natter a little later on. But first, the 154th International Print Exhibition runs until Saturday the 19th of May here in Wolverhampton. It's on display at Wolverhampton Art Gallery, as well as the School of Art and Design. And as part of that whole WLV photo experience, there is a camera obscura being set up on Tuesday the 24th and Wednesday the 25th of April. To tell us all about it, the woman who is actually inside the veiled chamber. Anne Walker, hello!
Hello!
I like the idea of you being in a veiled chamber. Is it like mist and smoke and Mystic Meg's crystal ball as well?
Well, it's very magical inside there. it is a veiled chamber. And there's purple drapes, complete with purple drapes. And the public and people are invited to walk inside this veiled chamber because I want to share the magical experience that they will experience inside of there.
So a camera obscura, this in Victorian times, well, probably before then as well, was entertainment, wasn't it? They'd be on seafronts up and down the country, special events, parks, places. I'm sure there's probably one at Crystal Palace so you could watch what was going on. But explain what it is, because I suppose it's a bit like CCTV of a bygone age.
Well, yeah, I think it does. It very much has connections with surveillance. in its most basic form, it's a darkened room with a single hole or an aperture. And light enters through the hole and it projects an inverted image of the outside world onto the interior space. There's actually one in Edinburgh as well, and I think that's a very sophisticated one, where the image is actually projected through lenses and mirrors, and it's projected onto a white table. And because the lenses and the lens all moves, you can actually move it around and see all sorts of things that are going on, you know. So if someone's trying to sneak a sneaky kiss or something, you know, people can see them inside.
Does that sort of thing happen a lot at the Allen Garden Centre on Old Hall Street where you're doing this? And is that what you're basically going to watch people canoodling tomorrow?
That's right, yeah. So, you know, they'll have to, you know, sort of, they won't know what, but we can sort of view them inside there, whatever they're up to.
Oh, dear.
It's
purely voyeurism on your part, isn't it, Anne? That's the only reason you agreed to do this.
No, it's not just voyeuristic, but it does definitely have connotations with voyeurism.
And is this all part of the work of the Creative Studies Tutor at Wolverhampton Adult Education Service? Is that the way you work it normally? You spy on your students as well?
Yes,
no. No, you don't, do you?
No. Yeah, it more than anything. I mean, I started working with camera obscuras probably about 6 years ago when I got really interested in the concept of it. And I blacked out a room in my home, which was blacked out for about a month, really, and playing with a camera obscura in there. And it is
watching the neighbours.
You've got it, Jason.
I couldn't get to sort of work it so that I could get that far to be able to see them.
It brings neighbourhood watch into a whole new light, or in fact, lack of it when you've blacked out the windows. But
yeah, and Big Brother.
I remember doing that sort of thing at school. Is it very easy to make if somebody wanted to?
Yeah, it's very easy. I mean, what I did in a room in my home, I just literally just used black bin bags at that time because I was just experimenting. And I just taped the black bin bags to the window. Then if you just put a little pinhole out about the size of a 2p coin, and you just have to make sure there's no other light coming in the room at all. So put towels and that to black out the light under the door and that. And you'll just get everything that's outside projected into your room. So with mine, it was gorgeous because you got like the trees and everything is upside down. So it's quite magical, really.
Now, I'm not being funny, but could you not just have taken the covering off the window and looked outside?
It's not the same.
It's not. No. It is, you know, a strange experience, isn't it? I've never been in a real one, but I've seen it when it's been done on TV, and it does look uncanny the way the image comes across, because it's not like a photograph, is it? It's something else.
It's very different because the way the light comes through, it's just very, very different to a photograph. And it moves. I mean, a photograph, you can make photographs inside the camera obscura if you put photosensitive paper in there. But inside the camera obscura, it's everything moves, obviously. So if people are walking outside and walking about, they're all upside down. And also, it's almost like an X-ray. So it's I've sort of done one of these before and invited people in, the ones when I was in Birmingham. And some people's description of it was that it was like viewing the skeleton of the city, you know, because it's very fuzzy as well. It's also like you get a very fuzzy image. So it is very different to make a photograph.
I've seen it on Midsummer Murders, and that looked very good.
You don't have to believe everything you see on there.
They had like a round table, and it was...
That was the Ouija board, I think they were doing with that one. It's entirely different, Zoe. But it makes you wonder how these things were first invented, and the phenomenon that creates it was noticed.
Yeah, well, it is said that Aristotle was the very first one, not to actually invent it, but it says that he was sitting under a tree during a partial eclipse of the sun, and he noticed that during the eclipse, the sun like cast multiple crescent-shaped images of itself on the ground because as the leaves moved, opened up little, like little pinholes, because they moved with the wind, and those little pinholes, and it projected the images through those little openings of the leaves onto the floor. And he'd never ever seen anything like that before. And after their observation, he actually built his own dark chamber or veiled chamber, and with a single small hole, and started making experiments. And then, I mean, to think that was 350 years before Christ, sort of thing. You know, it really, really goes back a long, long time.
Yeah.
And people have experimented with it. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, we view the world in a different way, because really, we don't see the world in one-point perspective.
No.
You know, but it's said to have begun with Aristotle, really.
And it is really the origins of the photography, which is part of the exhibition going on as of WLV Photo Fest as well, because pinhole cameras, as Zoe's on about, probably what she did at school, that was the first type of camera, no lens, a small dot, and then exposing the actual paper itself or glass in the olden days to produce the positive image in cameras of the day.
Yeah, that's right, and I think there's gradually becoming, digital is fantastic, I've worked with digital as well, but I think there is becoming a return to pinhole. People are starting to, I think as well, you get to really get to grips with how a camera works when you work with pinholes. Like, I teach pinhole at adult education, and generally, many of the students don't really know how a camera works because they've only ever worked with digital, and then can't really work it out. And then when you get them to make a box and just put a small pinhole in and the paper in, they go, what? Well, where's the memory card? And then they're absolutely gobsmacked when they suddenly find that they get an image from it, you know. But I think there is gradually becoming a return to, which things do happen like that sometimes. It goes round in circles and the older ways of working come back. But I like to combine the two. I like to sort of work with digital and with the pinhole.
It is very exciting because I've done A-level photography and when I did it, it wasn't digital. It was all the old photos, you know, the paper and things like that. Yeah, but it was really exciting taking your picture and not knowing what it was like until you went into the dark room and you developed it. And it was very, seeing this image come onto the paper when you developed it was very exciting. So,
yeah, I think it is. I think it's because it allows for accidents. And I think that can be the problem with digital. Like, some students might make an accident and I've seen it and I've thought, that's great, and they've deleted it before I've had a chance.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it kind of actually allows for the unexpected and the unknown. And that fact that you can't actually, when you're making the photograph with a pinhole camera as well, you're not really sure what you're going to get. And I think that's quite exciting as well, the unknown. So it's very exciting when it comes out in the dark room, isn't it? If you know, as you say, you've sort of that, it's like magic.
Well, you can see the veil chamber and disappear into the unknown and then see what's going on outside. And that's all taking place at the Allen Gardner Centre, Old Hall Street in Wolverhampton. And that's on Tuesday the 24th and Wednesday the 25th of April, between the hours of 10 and 5 o'clock, I believe.
That's right. Can I say just one thing? It is open between 10 and 5 o'clock, but the best viewing times are actually between 12:30 and 3 o'clock when the sun is high in the sky. The image is still great before that time and after that time, but it's absolutely amazing in the middle.
So, and are you taking bookings for those slots? And because it's free to get in, but if... You know,
it's free to get in, but people will only be allowed to go in one person at a time, because it's an experience. I think you need to experience it on your own. So it will be a case of people turning up, and we will just sort of make sure that everyone goes in turn. They'll probably stay in there about 5 minutes, so there'll be plenty of time for people to all come and view it.
And watch what's going on and see what you've been watching today whilst you've been setting it up, probably, but there we go. And are you able to take pictures whilst you're in there? Because if you've got a camera that with the right light level settings, you can probably get something of the hazy image that you see.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, people are welcome to come and make photographs while they're in there with lens-based cameras. Yeah, yeah, no, and you can do that. You would need the right lenses and everything to do that, because otherwise they won't come out. They won't come out very well.
It's getting the light right, and that's
it's just getting the light right,
and that's what it's all about. And you'll learn a bit as you do it. So this is the Camera Obscura, and as I say, it's at the Allen Gardner Centre, Old Hall Street in Wolverhampton, and that's on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, the 24th and 25th, 10 through till 5 o'clock. You can, of course, go along for the exhibition, which is taking place at the Wolverhampton Art Gallery. That's on Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. till 5 p.m, and the School of Art and Design in Wolverhampton as well, 10 a.m. till 5 p.m, Monday to Friday. Entry to both of those is free as part of the 154th International Print Exhibition, and that's on until Saturday, the 19th of May. Well, Anne, thank you for joining. It's good to hear about it. And I shall let you go back to twitching the curtains now, OK?
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Bye for now.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sam. Bye.
Right, let's take our first track from our featured band. They are of Kings and Captains. This is All We Have.
Back. You know it really takes
of Kings and Captains, all we have, their current single, available now on iTunes, etc. And to tell us more about it and the band, we have Luke Wassell. Hello, sir.
Hello there, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, so what's been going on of late then?
Busy, busy, busy. We've just released our first single out on iTunes from Biomonster Records, entitled All We Have, and we did the release party for that Saturday just gone, the 23rd.
And how did that go? Because you must have been having quite a busy night of it. Many a beer quaffed?
Yeah, it was a very lively night. It went on till the early hours of the morning, to be honest. It was great. Really good fun, really well received.
Now, did you get a chance to play as well as just listen to the CD?
Yes. We did.
That's
we
good.
Did.
It'd be awful to turn up to a party and just go, look, there you go, it's a disc.
I'm surprised you didn't get an invite to that, Jason.
I did actually. I did get an invite, but I was working. I couldn't get
you
there.
You normally try and blag it.
I didn't know they invited me. Oh, there okay. we go, Mark. Thank you for that one, mate. But I couldn't get there. So what sort of stuff went on then? How many tunes did you get a chance to play on the night?
We actually did a full set. We got through 13 records we played in the end, along with a support act. And the disco, which went on for a while afterwards, it was rather lively.
And I mean, I'm intrigued. What sort of music was played at the disco then? Based on the, what I know of your work, was it as a full-on pop party disco or of an indie rock night?
A bit of everything, really. We get quite a mixed audience in, from obviously the 18 to 20, and then 30s to 40s. So,
but your music itself is quite grown up, isn't it?
I suppose
it's not kiddie pop at all.
No, it's not kiddie pop. We're trying to avoid that sort of busted sort of thing. We're trying to be more, rock and roll in a way.
But your age is in the group, though. How old are you?
Yeah, 23, around about. The bassist is a little bit older, 24, but that's...
A little bit older, 12 months, that's nothing.
12 months.
That's quite old, isn't it, really?
No, it's not. From your point of view, somebody who turned 39, allegedly, last week.
No, not normally we get, like, bands on, and they're all quite... Just 12, starting out, aren't they? 17, 18, so... Uh-huh.
But it's nice
to have a more mature band on.
But it does mean that you've probably been able to go out, do a bit of work, buy proper instruments and get something that sounds really good.
Yes, we have tried. Stuff still breaks from time to time, but we try to avoid that. We've been playing for quite a while, so this band's fairly fresh, fairly new, but we've been doing the circuit in previous bands before this, so gained a bit of experience.
And what's happening as far as music goes? You say you played 13 tracks at the launch party. Are they all now in the can in the studio and ready for release as an album in the near future?
No, what we tend to do is we record the records. We pick the best ones, that we perceive to be our best records, and we record them and we release them as and when. As of the minute, we haven't got an album recorded. We tend to do the singles in the pro studio with our producer, Gavin, and we do the... Me and the other guitarist do a bit of recording, sort of do the B-sides, as you would put it.
Right, now, your producer, Gavin, could you name drop him properly, please?
Gavin Monahan, at the Magic Gardens.
The legendary Gavin Monahan.
The legendary Gavin Monahan.
Yeah.
He's shaking me for that.
Yeah, not just anybody, it's actually Gavin Monahan who's doing it. I mean, he's worked with loads of names over the years, hasn't he?
Yeah, Twang, the editors, and... Everything big that's come out of Birmingham, really.
Yeah, the lot.
I bet you're excited to be working with him.
He's brilliant. He's a real big help.
You've actually just recorded the next single as well. Now, we're saving that until last on the show today. We're in the latter part of the show going to be playing Don't Let Me Down. Where are these songs coming from? What are you writing about at the minute?
The records don't seem to follow any sort of theme from personal experience, really. We tend to write the music first, and then I'll go away and write the lyrics later, and we'll put the two together. Mostly about girls, as tends to be the case.
Favourite subject of most lads in bands, so does the job.
Relatable.
Yeah. And touring as well, though. You say you're being kept busy. On the road in the near future as well?
We're doing a few local gigs. We're doing Stourbridge, Wolverhampton. The next gig we're doing is Saturday the 5th of May, and that's down at Katie Fitzgerald's in Stourbridge.
Yeah.
It'll be the first time in about 8 months we've played this. That'll be that's all I anticipated for us as a band.
And chance to sell real copies of the CD as well?
Yeah, hard copies. Then we've actually got the party in the park, which is in Stourbridge as well. That's the 7th of May. We're actually off down to the Purple Test in Camden as well at some point.
But full details of all forthcoming gigs on the website?
Yes, of course. Oh, I can't remember them all.
But sure, as long as someone tells you when you've got to turn up in a band, that's all that really matters, isn't it? It's a bit rock and roll like that.
In the morning and think, oh, I'm playing there tonight. No, not really.
Send a car or make sure the van arrives on time and the job's done. What is the website address and do you Twitter and all that lot as well?
You can find us at Facebook / of Kings and Captains, MySpace / of Kings and Captains, and Twitter, which is at Kings and Captains.
Enjoy the music. We're going to listen to, say, four tracks from you. Next one up is Who's Your Hero? Yeah, you say it's probably about a girl. This one, the title doesn't imply young lady. What's the story there?
That's about the stresses of the relationship with working too hard and not having enough time aside.
It's about a lady.
Is it the girl sneaking there, whatever you're trying to do? Can't we? Luke, thanks for joining us, mate. Good luck with the single release. Hopefully you'll be edging up the iTunes chart very soon. And the easiest way of doing that, just search for Of Kings and Captains in the iTunes store.
Yeah, if you go to iTunes and search for Kings and Captains, then you'll find us there at the top of the list and all we have.
And if people want a copy of the thing on Real Life and CD, get along to a gig, or can they get in touch via the website as well?
They can do. As at the minute, we're not mailing them out. But if they turn up to a show occasionally, we'll be handing a few out on the door and stuff like that.
You never know. You might even sign a few copies as well.
Yeah, maybe.
It will be worth good cash in years to come, I can tell. Good luck with that one, and good luck with the release of the next single when it comes. Do you have a date for Don't Let Me Down being released yet?
Not just yet, no. We're sitting on it a bit, actually. You've got the very first copy.
This is a full preview we have later on, so there's something to look forward to. There we go. Luke, thank you for joining us, mate.
Great stuff, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, ciao for now. And here is Who's Your Hero from Of Kings and Captains. Kings and Captains, Who's Your Hero? Now, we go to the lines once more, where I find a gentleman who is part of the lineup of Bucks Fizz, who, of course, won the Eurovision Song Contest back in 1981 with Making Your Mind Up. Bobby G, hello, sir.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, smashing, thank you.
Now, I know, the career's not over, things are going on, you're working the whole time, you haven't stopped working, but can we please talk about the early 80s?
Yeah,
you
don't mind going back to the early
80s.
What I can remember.
Oh, yeah, I mean, how did it all start? Because I think there were auditions, weren't there, to join this fabulous band who were going to go on and win the Eurovision Song Contest?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, at the time I was in the West End in Jesus Christ Superstar, which was just coming to the end of its West End run, and there was auditions being held for a band. They didn't really give too much away on it,
yeah.
But it was just to put a band together for a one-off sort of performance, as a bit of a punt, really, just to see if it... Because it was for the show before the Eurovision. There were like 8 songs they were going to choose to see, so it was a real sort of, you know, a shot in the dark for something. And I did it because there was a break at the end of the Jesus Christ Superstar. There was about a 4 or 5 month break before it was going on tour. So I thought, well, I'll do that in the meantime.
It's a bit of pocket money, and you get to be on BBC One and meet Teddy Wogan, so it's always worth a go, I suppose.
That's it, yeah.
And it must have been amazing to go from packed out theatres doing what you do by day, but then to be catapulted into TV stardom and hitting the charts. It must have been somewhat different to the audience you were used to, shall I say, for starters.
Absolutely. Well, do you know, the funny thing was, the most difference it was I spent most of the successful years in terms of recording and selling records. There wasn't a great deal of live work going on. We would be in the studio recording things, and a lot of the televisions at the time, you'd go on and mime. So it was a bit of a culture shock from doing a live performance, you know, every night and sometimes twice nightly, to go and doing... you know, promoting records and things like that. So it was very much a completely different way of doing entertainment.
And how was that song chosen for you? Because I guess you probably didn't have too much input into that based on the way the band came together.
No, none at all. The song was already chosen to be one of the 8 to go forward to be in the Song for Europe, they call it.
Yeah.
And so that... basically, there was a demo of the song, of which we re-recorded for, obviously, the single, and for we obviously went on and performed it for the Song for Europe and the Eurovision. But it was very much based around the song and was put together to perform the song. So at that stage, we signed a record contract for, effectively, it was a 6-month record contract, and had the song not have won the Eurovision, we'd have all walked away with, you know, no ties to anything. The clause in there that if it did win, obviously we were tied up for 5 years and so many albums, which, you know, in real terms was, the deal was fine, you know. I mean, I know a lot of people quibble about their record deals, but because of what we'd walked in there to, there was absolutely nothing wrong with the deal.
It basically was like a day job, really.
Very much so, yeah. I think I've always looked at this as a day job.
Oh, no, and of course, you're an internationally renowned pop star. That's not quite the same at all, but it's it's, you know, a great experience, a great way of getting into it.
How much time did you have from when you'd done your auditions and you're all together as a band to when you actually went on to Eurovision? Was it quite quick, or...?
Well, the first, as I say, the first show was a Song for Europe, and it was probably... I think they decided who the band was going to be in around about the sort of December, January. Mm-hmm. And then it was about a 2-month period before that show was going to go on. And I think we rehearsed for about a month. But all we did was we learnt one song, mm-hmm. and the one performance,
yeah.
just to go and do it. And mm-hmm. so it didn't really take up a lot of time. So, there, you know, there was lots of other things I was doing along with it at that initial stage.
But then everything changed. You went on along. And where was the competition the year you won?
It was in Dublin.
So it wasn't too far to travel, because Ireland had this habit of winning. So, you know, it must have been quite simple, just a trip over the water.
It was, yeah, I mean, it could have been somewhere more glamorous. it was great. It was, I mean, when we were putting it on, Ireland did a great job of putting it on. It was a huge venue and everything. So it was a great event to be involved in, to be honest. Apart from the fact that obviously we won it, it changed the parameters of it. Once we'd won, then it sort of went on. But had we not have won, it was still a great thing to be involved in.
Mm.
And the success from that then brought along, you know, a studio album, and it's pretty much, was it 3 years or something like that, the main hiatus that really got things up and running in the time of Buck's Fizz?
Yeah, I mean, we was actually doing really well for the first 3 years. Of course, we had the hiccup. We had the coach crash, if anybody remembers that.
That was rather more than a hiccup. Fortunately, everybody got out of that and managed to pull everything back together.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it could have been an awful lot worse than it was. That's all you can say, you know. Yeah. And thankfully, everybody, you know, got over there. We had a couple of people that were injured quite badly, a keyboard player and stuff. So everybody came out of it okay, and you know, and looking back, everybody was very lucky. I think that kind of put a stop to the early part of the career, and we did come back and have a bit more success afterwards. And in fairness, it may have probably elongated the kind of record success that the band would have had, just because we were sort of cut short a little bit. But really, we had a great run at it, sort of, you know, for a band to sort of be in the charts and keep sort of popping back in for the first sort of 3 years of its existence is really, really great, because it's obviously been the beginning of what I spent the last 30 years doing.
But were you at that point given a bit more creative control then? Were you able to write on the songs that you're putting out on that first album?
Yeah, well, I'd been involved with writing and a little bit of producing. Obviously, it wasn't my place to sort of insist on anything. But in fairness, you know, I got involved with writing straight away and producing. So I think I had a couple of tracks on the first album. And then, you know, as it sort of progressed, I was writing for the band and stuff myself. So there was no problem with the fact of anybody putting their artistic involvement in it, but in reality, we had a superb writer and producer. Nicola Martin was a great production manager, and RCA at the time were just the best record company in the world, so you couldn't argue with what they were doing, and they made a great job of it. If it was left to us, we wouldn't have had the same success, to be fair.
Well, we'll come back to that in a moment or two's time. We'll take a quick break and take another track from our featured band today. This is our third tune from them, of Kings and Captains. This is Gossip.
Won't slip, won't fall. You make my heart stop.
Kings and Captains. That one is Gossip. And back to the phones we go. And Bobby G is still with us. Now, we were talking about your the early years a short while ago, and I probably still haven't forgiven you and the band, because my sister had a copy of The Land of Make-Believe.
Oh, now, I used to love that song.
Lovely song. Yes. Great song. Didn't mind her buying it at all, apart from the fact she bought an ex-jukebox copy, which was slightly warped. It had been too close to the radiator in a pub. And unless you've heard that song in the slightly wavy version I've heard it, you've never heard it how it was probably meant to sound.
There's nothing like vinyl, is there?
But you've made it through the vinyl stage onto CD, and now your work's probably available as an MP3 best of somewhere. How do you look back over the times and all the best ofs? Do you look at it and think, well, hang on, those are my favourite tracks? I mean, do you have any of your own stuff on your iPod?
To be honest, I don't. And also, to be honest, I don't have an iPod.
Ah.
I'm still... CDs, I'm okay with CDs. I've got to have something I can touch. I don't know. It's a bit of digital data. Doesn't quite feel the same. And to be honest, because I've been in sort of production and things, there is a difference in the sound. You know, an MP3 is great for its convenience, but it misses out some of the warmth of a track for me. So I haven't gone down that road, to be fair.
It's not where you are at the minute.
But you're still singing some of your old tracks anyway.
I'm very much the band is still going, although I'm the original left. But we still go out and we're working constantly, really. It's a variety of out in Europe at the moment. We've taken on a season with Born Leisure, so we're doing a lot of their holiday camps. In amongst that, we're doing things for Eurovision coming up. We do a few theatres and a few TVs abroad, so it carries on pretty much the same every year, you know, with a mixture of types of things that we're doing. Mm. And in amongst that, of course, people want to see and hear the original songs. Plus, you know, we do a few covers and a few other bits and pieces we sort of knocked together over the years. So, but it's still very much as people would like to sort of see the band.
Mm-hmm. I saw you a couple of weekends ago when you was at Bethele. And it was very nice to hear some of the tracks that I remember when I was... younger, particularly the one that was in Eurovision.
But there is still so much more, though, because there's all your solo work as well, because you did do quite a bit of stuff on your own, didn't you?
Over the years, I've done a bit on my own. I did a few sort of mostly writing for TV and incidental music and sort of advertising and things. So I've kind of kept that side of it up. That's a bit more...
It's a bit more commercial and less fun, I'm guessing.
Well, it is, but you have to sort of accept. I know I've readily accept that the actual record and pop industry needs to move on. We had a great time, and we had we sold a lot of records over a 3 or 4 year period, but we can't compete with the likes of the artists that are coming up today. So therefore, you know, the writing and stuff like that, I've put more and more into an area that pays money.
But, I mean, you've got the skill, you've got the experience, you know what sells and what doesn't, so you know how to make these things sound good. But, you know, it's still there. There's definitely a market for, you know, the history and the reminiscence of tracks gone by. I mean, it was probably, 2 years since we had the Nolans on the show. Mm. And they were on the verge of releasing an album of cover versions and some of their own stuff there. But everybody loves I'm in the Mood for Dancing. But to hear the same sort of bands, and obviously they've been on tour and played venues, you go out there and you're doing those sort of songs. And it is about the tracks... Yeah, I mean, godsend to me when I've been DJing, doing 80s nights back in the 90s, I'll admit.
Dancing.
But yeah, everybody up on stage, dancing along to a bit of Bucks Fizz.
It's great because the nostalgia. I mean, the fact that in fact 80s at the moment is reasonably well sort of popular. It's taken its turn in the we've had the 60s and 70s. We're kind of kicking around the 80s and whatever. So it is reasonably popular. But I think if we actually were still out there recording, I don't think people they don't really want to hear new material from us. It's, they want to hear what we've done in the past, and so that's what we try and do. Yeah, we try and please the public.
Have you ever been asked to go back and perhaps write and produce a song for Eurovision? Has that ever been in the pipeline?
Well, it's such a long shot, to be honest. I think if I was just a songwriter, then without question, I would each year put all of my, you know, what I'd written through the year into the Eurovision, because if you do get a song away in the Eurovision, if it does win that, then obviously it earns you a lot of credibility and obviously money. But because most of what I do is as a live act, a gigging artist, as I'd like to say, I mean, which is where I enjoy myself. I've always enjoyed just sort of being on stage and working as an act. It does take a lot of time sitting down and writing and producing and stuff. So I put my efforts into what I kind of enjoy the most.
I think we need to have a good one, don't we?
We need something of the calibre of, yes. You know, making your mind about it.
I don't think there's been anything that's won so well, has there, since?
Well, the Katrina and the Waves have been good, but I think if we could get you back up there. But I mean, we just hark back to the Eurovision. The one thing I'm sure you're asked about a lot is the ripping off of the skirts thing. Now, I remember trying to recreate that in the playground at school. Long story, let's not go there just at the minute. I didn't get in trouble, it was okay.
Did you get into trouble?
I was only 9. But
what sort of skirt were you wearing?
Obviously a yellow plastic one or whatever it was you had on the girls had in the originals. But you know, that sort of thing. I mean, it was fully choreographed at the time. But do you still try to recreate that sort of thing in the stage show?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, we still do it. It's very much a part of the act. People want to come along and they want to actually see the skirts being ripped off. So we still do that every time we go on stage. That's one of our highlights, if you like.
And what is the lineup these days? So I think reading through some of the interesting amount of stuff there is online about Books Fizz, there's been about 15 members or something over the years, the claims on the internet are. But obviously, people move on, they go off and do different things like their TV careers and whatever else, whoever they choose to spend their time. So give us the current lineup and how it works.
Well, the current lineup is obviously myself, Heidi, who's Heidi Manton, who's actually my wife. She's been my wife for about 12 years, and she joined the group, I think it's about 20 years or 21 years since she's been in the band now. And then there's Tammy Choate and Paul Yates. That's the lineup. And you're right, people have sort of, there's been quite a few members over the years, but I think everybody's sort of been in for... apart from one or two people that have sort of come in and it's not worked out too favourably and they sort of left reasonably quickly. But most people have been in for sort of 5 years. We've been going for such a long time.
It's one of those things that moves around. It's the number of different bands who have been going for that sort of length of time. You do change. People move on. They want to do different things. So it's only natural that there is some sort of changeover, but it's still the ethos and the experience, the excitement and the songs that make that sort of night, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, we very much... The band, even with the change of lineup, the band's the whole kind of performance and the way everything's sort of gone forward, the band, it's evolved. I mean, it's not absolutely the same as it was. I think in real terms, it's probably... better now than when we first started, because of the, you know, we can actually rehearse more, we can actually get things much better. But it's evolved. People go, and we replace them with, you know, we audition somebody to fit in with the lineup that we've got. And it's just, I think it's the way most bands go. Really, I wouldn't, I shouldn't think there's many 80s bands. I do know that Brotherhood of Man are the original lineup because we often do quite a bit of work with them. And they've been going for
72. They were going, weren't they?
Yeah, but even they've had lineup changes, and they've kind of drifted away. Somebody's replaced them, and then they've kind of come back to the original lineup. So, you know, I don't think there's many bands I can think of that have stayed, you know, the same over the whole years.
So it is a very good night because I enjoyed it. I was in Pathelli, as I say, a couple of weekends ago, and it was. Do you know, when I saw it advertised, I didn't believe it would be the real Books Fizz. I thought it was like a tribute band. And then when you came on stage and started singing, because you haven't changed a bit since you were in the charts.
You're still blonde.
Yeah.
That was the other thing. The whole band.
What you don't notice, the blonde's turned grey.
Perhaps I was a bit
blonde.
Too far away, but you look exactly the same to me.
Yeah, but more wrinkly.
But still knocking the tunes out, which is what counts.
It was a very good night, and everybody enjoyed themselves as well. So.
Now, thank you. Yeah.
The next thing I say worries me slightly because you haven't got an iPod. Do you have a website and stuff to plug the band?
We have a website. We're very much up to date with everything.
You've got somebody who does that. Heidi does all that, doesn't she? I bet.
Well, to be fair, we have a production company, so I have a.
You cheat.
Yeah, I know. We have a sound and lights company because we've been going for so long. We got so much stuff. We generally have everything in place as a business. So we've got all of the websites set up and all of the. You know, we even have our own trucking and everything these days. So
you're on Facebook or Twitter?
We don't do Facebook or Twitter. No, we do the internet. We're kind of associated, but I try and steer clear of those things. I think I'm a bit of an old fuddy-duddy, I suppose.
Well, you can't really put as much information on those type of places than you can your own website anyway, can you?
Well, the trouble is for me, you know, with Facebook, it's not good for everybody to know exactly what, you know, I don't put down there what I'm thinking because I try to think nice things when I'm in public. You know, so it's just the way we kind of carry forward. But
well, give us the web address so people can check out dates for the gigs.
Well, it's bucksfizz.co.uk.
Simple as that. Just get on there.
Yeah, and we're there and they can see where we are, what we're doing, and they get a gist of what it's all about.
Bobby G, Eurovision winner, and it's not often we get a chance to say that.
No.
Thank you so much for joining us. Lovely to speak to you, and good luck with the ongoing tour, because it's never going to end, is it?
Well, it will one day, but not for a while, I hope. But thank you very much.
Cheers, Bobby. Thanks for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Time to take our final tune from Of Kings and Captains now. This one is the exclusive. Luke mentioned earlier on that nobody else has played this. I'm not sure the band have heard this yet.
Do you think not?
No, not. This is Don't Let Me Down.
Thank you.
Kings and Captains Don't Let Me Down. Zoe, what did you think?
Very good, very impressed.
Yeah, so you've advanced copy.
I have a sneak of your copy. Yes.
You want to borrow it?
Can I?
It's an MP3. I'll hand you the numbers later.
Okay.
I haven't got it on CD. It's that fresh. It came by email and everything. There we go. Right, end of another show. Been a fun one too.
It has been very enjoyable.
There we go. And you've reminisced about your times dancing around to the 80s vibe.
Yes. Yeah. And my brother was a Bucks Fizz and ABBA fanatic. He used to have his bedroom covered in both of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
He fancied Cheryl Baker.
I don't know who he fancied.
Okay.
He liked all of them, apart for the boys, of course.
Yeah. No. Didn't fancy.
Had all the records.
Didn't fancy
anyway.
Bobby.
No.
So he's not going to be impressed that you've spoken to him. But you did, and as we said, you thought he was still rather lovely when you saw him the other week.
Yes, it does. It just hasn't changed at all.
There we go.
I should have flung myself at the stage, didn't I?
I don't think the stage would have coped with that, to be fair. It could have brought the entire gig to a halt, but there we go. Right, we're back next week. We shall see you then. Ta-ra for now.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye from the milk bar. 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 Yeah. Goodbye from the milk bar. Yeah.